today?
Hi. It is Thursday, January 24th, 2019, and we are in a budget work session for community services and I believe mental health. And we have Carla Webb and Aaron Rubrick here with us, and our chair, Laura Solson, just called, and she's delayed due to weather. She did say she had some questions about the new position that was being requested, so we'll hold that till the last, if that's possible. Does that work for you? Okay, so I'm going to say, Carla, why don't you start us out and tell us what you think the highlights are and the things we should be looking at and your concerns.
Thank you for having us today. For the community services budget, I think the biggest change here would be that request for a housing service coordinator position. The other thing that we were looking at is moving funds, salary from general fund to mental health fund for one employee. We would be reducing that by 25%, so she would be all 100% mental health. Prior to doing the budget, we took a look at if she was doing any general assistance work, and due to some restructuring in our office where we've got our administrative assistants having a more active role in our general assistance program, she's really not doing anything but general assistance. We thought it made more sense to have all of her salary come out of mental health. And we'd also be reducing another service coordinator who is currently 50-50, reducing her down to 25% out of the general fund and 75% mental health. Because she her role primarily, again, she was one that had done general assistance. She's not getting utilized in that capacity, but she still works with substance use services, substance use and health and detox.
You're just doing a realignment according to where people are actually spending their time.
Correct.
I did the math, but I reflected in your numbers for salaries because I did try to do all that. I didn't have them as a position, but I did read that's the numbers and where they're at for the budget.
Did anybody have any questions about that?
Next, I think it's pretty standard for our budget. We do share some expenses between Veterans Affairs and mental health, so we've identified that throughout the budget where that occurs. I didn't make any changes on communication services, as I understand those costs stay relatively the same.
Which makes me think we could...
I had a question there.
Sure. Okay.
Because I think they are going to stay the same. You spent $643 so far this year. We're re-estimating down to $1,240, and so I was just curious, is there a reason that it's going to be more than $1,300?
No,
or is that where we're going?
It's where we on?
This is 414.
Thank you.
So midway down, it's page 58. And?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
So it's a great budget, Carla, as always. I just think that it looks to me like we're more like 1,300 in that line item.
Would that change with the addition of a position? Would you need another phone?
It would, but that wouldn't have been factored in here. It shouldn't have been factored in here. I don't believe I had those costs in.
Until after the position is approved. So they're good. I mean, if the position is approved.
Yep.
So I guess we have a discussion next year when we're looking at the re-estimation.
I think you're right. Right, and I don't know why I put it back to 1910. I was probably thinking, oh, that's
just carry over. Right?
Yeah, but it's been so leave it there. But with my re-estimate, I should have brought that down.
So what are we looking at to figure that should come for us?
Well, if we proceeded with not adding in the cost for the new position, I agree with Rick. It should be the $1,240.
Okay. Good. If we raise this to the next page, I had a question on the funeral services. We've only spent $10,000 this year, and you're re-estimating at $37,000. Am I reading this right?
Yeah, when we, at the time it would have done the budget, that's where I thought we would be coming in at. I think the funeral services is tricky for us to budget for because we just never know for sure when it's going to, when we're going to need to be able to tap into those funds. So, but even at the end of December, we still have a balance of $19,540. So, that's very well.
Your high was the end of 18 was just under 35,000.
So we've been averaging 19 funerals a year. And that's what you plug in here. It looks like we're going to be less than 19 funerals this year. So the question is, how many do we want to budget for?
We have been running about 15.
Right.
And so this year when I went back and looked, now we're at 19. So, I mean, if we wanted to shoot for 15 this year.
Now, my suggestion would be we just back it off to 15. We know we're going to pay for what we need to pay for out of this line item. But it looks to me like 15 might be a better estimation. We know that our costs are going up, what, they go up 2% or something.
Right.
But just multiply our true cost by 15, and that might be a good spot to plug into the brain.
So what would that
mean? That would be 29.9 for sake of argument.
$29.9.
Yeah. Because it's 1993 at...
Oh, but right now it's 1954.
1993 is what we're saying you're budgeting for next year per funeral. And if I take that times 15, it is 2098.95. So I'm thinking 29.9 in that line item.
So that would be for FY20. But if
so, the current year, do we want to put 22 in there for a reestimation?
If I was following Rick's comments, I was thinking if we reestimated for FY19, 15 funerals at 1954, which is our current reimbursement,
right.
That would be 29,310.
Okay, so we'll drop that down to 29,000 for sake of reasonable argument.
Right, but that's where
we're
going to
pay for it.
This should be clear. That's where we started. We budgeted for 15 funerals last year.
Great.
It looks like that's where we're going to end up. And so budgeting for 15 funerals for next year just makes sense to me if that's what we're tracking.
So we're talking about a reestimated 29,000 this year and then a 29,900 for next year.
Okay. So
the other question that I had was on line 427, for the appointed council, excuse me. And I know that's another one that's hard to estimate, but what I'm looking at is your highest was 2,300 about last year, and you've only spent 564 so far this year. So I was wondering what might be on your mind or what you know, your crystal ball.
I think, I just put that number in there. That's kind of where it's been through time and at that number. So no real, again, it's one of those we just never know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'd be fine with pulling that down some as well.
Well, and I think if I'm not mistaken, we've been pulling this down every year. We've been cautious about how much we pulled down, but it feels like that this was an $8,000 or $10,000 line item at one point, and we started bending it down 3 or 4 years ago, and it looks to me like we just never caught back up.
I don't know if we've ever had it that high.
Yeah,
really?
That might have been hospital.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of these, the hospital care, the inpatient, transportation, we use the budget a lot higher.
Okay.
For a just in case. We pulled those down to,
right,
let's have a placeholder, knowing that if there's a catastrophe, then we're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one to me looks like a $25,000 line.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean,
yep,
again, we're going to pay for whatever we need to pay for.
Mm-hmm. So $2,200 still for the reestimate and $2,500 for next year?
I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. I think she reestimated recently there.
Okay.
So something I don't see in here that I think we're going to talk about more when we get to mental health, but I don't. So my understanding was we were talking our vehicles we use out of community services for Veterans Affairs and mental health. And now with this proposal, that, well, with this idea that we need new vehicles and one way to do that would be leasing them, why is there not anything in community services?
We haven't pulled costs out of the community services budget historically, so that's why it's not in there. Certainly something we can look at. Pretty much it's come out of the mental health side.
Okay. But now we've got VA contributing or planning to contribute.
They currently do, yeah.
And we do, in fact, use the vehicle some with community services.
Like for Erin, her salary comes out of the general fund, so she is using it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
I do.
Okay, so after those three line item changes, my new bottom line on this budget is $329,755.
Can we, so are there any more questions about this other than the item we're holding, which is the positions that's being requested? If not, then we will go on to mental health. Is that correct? The health administration? Okay. And do you want to lead off on this one?
I think
sure.
So for mental health, you know, with the exception of what we're looking at on the card, it's pretty standard budget, I would say, that's what it's been in recent years. How it works for us with mental health is we keep 200% of our budget locally to pay for our administrative costs, office expenses, those kinds of things that you see in the budget. And then every year in June, we send a payment out of mental health funds to the fiscal agent. And that, trying to figure out that regional disbursement amount, I think each year is a little tricky at this point until we get closer to the end of the fiscal year to know sure what it's going to look like. Lisa and I talked about it in the past. Our estimates in there at this point in time. So, yeah, otherwise, is there any questions, Linda? I don't know if that makes sense to you, how we keep a little bit, we keep a part of the budget here locally and then the rest goes over to the region. Madison County, our fiscal agent, and that's where our service costs.
So when does the money go to Madison County?
Yes, our regional
expenses
in June.
The end of the fiscal year?
Uh-huh.
So they're still operating off the surplus funds, basically, until the end of the year, and then the counties kind of settle up. Is that a fair way to put it?
Right now we do have a significant ending fund balance.
Yes.
So
ending fund balance is a better way to put it, sorry.
And so, last year we spent our dollars there. And so, yeah, they're using that ending fund balance and the dollars that we spent last year to pay for the services this year.
So at some point, is that cash flow situation not going to work for the fiscal agent? As our ending fund balance gets lower, would we anticipate then that if the counties will have to send money earlier in the year?
I think the potential could be there. With the cap right now on our ending fund balance, and the levy caps in that, I think in a couple of years, we're going to start seeing a roller coaster, and it's going to get more difficult to manage those dollars.
Thank you.
More difficult to manage those dollars and almost impossible to start any new services.
I believe it's in 2023, 2024, our starting fund balance is, we will have difficulty in just paying staff for that first quarter.
0.9% or something like that. With the caps that are in place, the caps are in place.
We have figured out how we'll manage that yet. Certainly, I'm certainly hoping that there will be movement by the legislature this year on removing that new fund balance cap as well as looking at that.
And at this point in time, the way the mental health budget was presented, we re-estimated the amount to the region to 1.8. We budgeted 1.6, but Carl and I have re-estimated it to 1.8, which leaves us right at 200%, because that's the goal. Or that's what we keep. So we're leaving right at 200% by doing that. So I'm pretty comfortable with that re-estimation at this point in time still. What happens is in March, the Finance Committee for the region, which Lucy and I are members of, get reports from all the counties, where they're at, where they've spent, what their projections are for the end of the fiscal year, and that's when they determine how much to spend to the region out of our fund. Like I said, it's been the 200% remaining here. But all we can do is give it the best shot we got, even in March, because we don't know what the end of the fund balance is going to be June 30th. But we've been pretty good about figuring it out real close.
And I would say the caveat to what we're going to spend this year in June is going to depend somewhat on what the state legislature does. Hopefully they're going to remove these artificial 20 and 25% caps. But in the event they don't, I think it's going to be incumbent upon the CICS and every board of supervisors to look for workarounds, which may include not spending any dollars this year. Again, depending on how the state's counting the dollars, I could see a scenario where counties from CICS don't submit dollars this year.
Well,
if we're trying to artificially manipulate what it looks like our ending fund balance is, that's going to be up to CICS.
Don't they include all of these funds are included as far as they are regional funds, even though we're holding them locally?
Yes. But the language in some of the things the state is talking about right now, it looks to me at this point like there's a potential loophole there. Linda actually asked this question. I don't know if it was once you started here or before you started here, but you're the one who intrigued me to start looking into the language. And I'm not trying to give anybody a big heads up anywhere. I'm just trying to say we don't know yet exactly what this is going to look like, and I believe we need to have as much flexibility in dealing with whatever the state hands us. Right? It's our responsibility to do the best we can with whatever the state asks. And so we just need to stay flexible.
And I do have today's meeting, CICS will actually officially make the determination how much they're going to request in each county. I did tell you that what our max was, and I was wrong. I'm a big girl, I'll admit that. Our max is $35.50 per capita, and that would be $3,461,321. This is stuff you will get and or it'll be presented to you, but I just want to give you a heads up on it. The region is going to recommend, it's going to recommend $22.20 per capita, which is $2.16 million, which is about almost exactly what we paid last year. Again, I'll get on my soapbox and talk about the fact that this is the only levy that is per capita figured until it comes down to the actual certification, which is valuation.
So, Carla, that changes the numbers you shared with me yesterday.
No, what she was pulling that from is that levy information that was going to happen in her report.
Okay, so that's correct.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That 2.164 is 44 cents per thousand. That's how we'll look on the levy sheet when we certify the budget.
Thank you.
Just for comparison, the high that Story County has been in years past, it feels like, Lisa, it's in that 75 cent.
75 or 78.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
I would suggest that we continue on where we are through these expenses and then go back to the job description and the proposed position. Is that okay with everybody?
That's fine.
Okay. So, on 65, page 65, line 9, 50, line 60, is showing a reduced disbursement to the region next year to try to get that ending fund balance down, correct?
Complete swag number. It has been the last few years a complete swag number, and the number that we plug in there is not going to matter at all in terms of what we're going to contribute to the region. We're going to contribute whatever the region tells us to contribute.
At the end of the year?
Yes.
Carla and I just had this conversation before we started, but if we actually, with the number that we put in the region, we are being asked to levy, and where we stand with budget, we can increase that by about $306,000 to bring our ending fund balance to the 200%. So if that's the case, we would once again be at the $1.8 million approximately, a little over. So when we actually put the budget together, that's a determination you guys can make as to what dollar you want to put in there, knowing that it's going to be somewhere in that 1.6 to 1.9
region
of how much we're going to send, if that's what we're going to do.
We have been budgeting, and just to underscore this point for Linda, we have been budgeting, we budgeted more in this line item than we actually sent, and we felt like that was silly to be putting a number in our budget that we weren't actually going to spend, and so then we went the other way last year. We went to 1.6, thinking that probably we were going to be in that 1.7 to 1.8 range. But we went to 1.6, because we thought it was a reasonable estimate, and it helped us put together the rest of our budget. Now we just need to make the determination of where we're going to head this time. I'd hate for us to overestimate what we're going to spend, but I'd like for us to hit it as closely as we can.
Moving on to something maybe a little more mundane on page 66, 250-60, fuels, motor vehicle supplies. We'll have more information for budget work session, you say?
So with this, and I believe Brett spoke about our vehicles during his affairs work session, our cars are 2010 models. We have two of them. They were leased vehicles before they were purchased for our office. And we're starting to see, while they don't have really what I would consider to be a lot of miles, from time to time we're starting to see where they're making repairs. But right now, both cars are at one's about at 80,000 miles, one's at about 67.5 per mile. In FY18, as far as repairs, we spent about $1,231 on repairs. And in FY19 so far, we've spent about $527. What happened this year was the vehicle actually broke down while Brett was out on the road. Maybe share that. So we of course dealt with it and everything, but just concerns that we may start to see our costs increase. A few years ago, we actually had three vehicles. And we ended up selling one through auction with the city. They assisted us with that. And I believe it came in with needing repairs almost $4,000. And it just didn't make sense to repair it when the vehicle probably wasn't worried about that. So that's the only thing I'm looking at right now is trying to avoid that situation where we may come in with significant repairs on the cars. We are looking at where probably both vehicles are going to need new tires here in the near future. So an option we talked about doing is looking into leasing a vehicle. I did call local dealerships. I attempted to get information from three. I was able to get information from two local dealerships. One gave me a quote between $320 to $340 a month to lease. So So when I put the budget together, I put 350. That would be for like a $28,000 vehicle standard option. Mileage standard, at least for mileage, would be 15,000. Generally, our office stays under that. So I don't think that would be a problem for us. They're 3-year leases. The other dealership that I spoke with indicated that they really couldn't give me an idea on cost. They didn't have any county leasing program. They indicated that the payment would be set up however we wanted to structure it. We wanted it to be a monthly, quarterly, annual payment, I believe, and however we wanted to do it. Looked at it as you like a leasing the vehicle, is what he indicated. So, both of them indicated, though, they couldn't really give me a firm price or anything, and because leasing costs changes throughout the year, so take your specialty and run that kind of thing. So, it wouldn't be anything where I would have solid figures until we, if the board decided that.
So, CICS, Carla, do they own any vehicles, or do they all use county vehicles, and what mechanism, if any, is CICS using to reimburse counties for the use of those vehicles?
So most of the counties, I don't believe, have county vehicles that are used. Employees are using their own vehicles and receiving mileage reimbursement that way. It's CICS dollars, basically. I mean, our dollars, but
reimbursing the employees for using their own vehicles.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think my understanding, we're probably one of the only counties that really tries to ensure that we've got those county vehicles for staff to use, has been my understanding. A few may have one vehicle or something, but yeah. I'm not aware of them ensuring that there's county vehicles.
So I believe we need two new vehicles. I believe they're used by community services, Veterans Affairs, and mental health. I don't like leasing as an option. I mean, it's a bad option for a lot of reasons. I believe that we ought to go buy two new vehicles. And what the question in my mind, well, what I've asked that for, is I wanted to know if we could buy them out of mental health and then charge VA and community services to use them. What I'm hearing is that there's no mechanism in CICS to do that. So then I flip it and I say, let's buy a couple of vehicles out of the general fund and then charge mental health their portion of that, but it would be a payment from mental health back to the county for the use of our, as they use our vehicles. I would further go on to suggest that it's time for the county to start buying hybrid vehicles, I guess more hybrid vehicles we have in the past. I'd like to see us go down that road.
You got a quote on normal, you know, the standard. So I'm trying to remember, it's been so many years since Terry and I brought our hybrid, but I seem to recall them would need a premium for the hybrid. We haven't bid on one since, so maybe are we looking at $30,000 each to go for a hybrid vehicle?
I'd say you can get hybrids for $30,000, but I mean it depends on what we're getting.
Yeah, so I would use the trade-ins for
us. We'll use these. I would want us to use these as trade-ins for sure. And I don't think it's a 3-year, so you go to the lease option and you're paying that amount in perpetuity, right? And I believe with the way we use vehicles, it's reasonable to think that we're going to get 6, 7, or 8 years out of these vehicles. And I think we need to get the vehicle that's right for what we're asking to do. I just think in today's age that us looking at hybrids wherever we can is the right thing for us to do.
Two vehicles the two vehicles are used fairly regularly, so two vehicles is what you can use.
Yeah, I would recommend two.
You said you put like less than $15,000 a year on?
Yeah, I would recommend
two. It's not that many. Combined, right? A piece. Okay, so $30,000. Yeah. I was very low my place.
What is these vehicles set when they're not in, when they're not out on the road? Overnight.
In the county parking lot.
In the parking
facility has designated parking spaces.
Okay. And how about, didn't we start a few years ago that, like, if somebody wanted to check that one of those out, like, if you lived in Ames, you could go to the for a meeting, you can check out.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys both to check them out. So they're counting cars, they're used by
everybody. And I think when I looked at just how we try to determine the percentage of usage when we're figuring out for the next fiscal year for cost, the Board of Supervisors is at about 5% right now for utilization. So it's small. Mental health is about 68 and VA is about 27. Back to your question about CICS. If we were to look at seeing if CICS would fund, could be used for the purchase of the vehicle, or at least one of them, any purchase over $5,000 does need to go before our administrative team for approval. So that means, I'm certainly happy to go and talk with them about that. I haven't seen it done yet for a
but you were suggesting general fund and then charge back.
So I love the idea of using mental health funds, but I didn't see a mechanism to do that. And so now what I'm suggesting is we buy them out of the general fund and we simply charge mental health. What is it? Is the federal rate 54 cents a mile that we were reimbursing somebody?
Right.
So we just charge mental health. You track the miles when it's being used for mental health, and we charge that back to the mental
the
health.
Region. You're talking about the region where we take mental health. And that's exactly what I would. I like.
It would be part of our direct admin space. So this wouldn't, as I see, right? Mm-hmm. So this is all built into our direct admin fee. I don't know that the 7,000 that you've estimated in mental health is way off. I mean, so if you're telling me that it's 68% of 20,000 miles a year, that's 13,000 miles, which at 54 cents, you're talking about $7,500, right? So I don't think your estimate is that far off. And then we wouldn't have to worry about VA, community services, Board of Supervisors, because that's all county usage with a county-owned vehicle. We would just have to worry about the number of miles put on by mental health and figure out a fair, reasonable mechanism to charge that back to mental health.
I like that. It's clean.
It's very simple. So we're on the 15,000. What percentage of them do you think would be charged back to mental health?
Right now, it would be at 68%.
Of one vehicle?
Of both.
You have a mind of the whatever the mileage.
And so I upped it in my mind, Linda, as I was doing the math. I said 20,000 miles for the two vehicles, so call it 10,000 per vehicle. And I said 68% of that are mental health miles. And that's how I got to the numbers, I guess.
I like the hybrid option because of gas, the environment and all of that. And a little bit why I also raised cash about the cost, increasing like to 30,000 is obviously we can get a very, very small subcompact hybrid, but I don't know if we want to go that low of a small car, given that there may be a variety of people driving it. Not everybody fits well into one of the small ones. So I was thinking, are you looking at replacing with maybe a Malibu or a Camry? I mean, that size, mid size.
Yeah, so I was actually, in my mind, Morris, I was thinking more like a Ford Focus or Toyota Highlander or something like that. That is a function hybrid, but it has a little higher profile. It's a little easier to take people in.
I would think of a Focus as a small car.
I didn't mean Focus. I'm sorry. I meant what's the smallest SUV?
Escape.
Thank you.
It's a Ford.
It's an Escape, and then there's
Escape, RAV4. Those are the ones.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, thank you.
So, $50,000 coverage. If I put that in money.
$50,000?
With $50,000 number two vehicles with trade-in.
With trade-in, yes.
Oh, with trade-in, okay.
Because those two they're Impalas, right? What do we have right now?
Okay.
Impala, I think. And I'm betting they're worth six or eight apiece on trade. That's a complete guess.
But, yeah, that sounds good with true. Just trying to.
They're clean vehicles.
So So what I'm suggesting is that we would leave the 7,000 in mental health. We're still pulling it out of Veterans Affairs, but we would leave it in mental health just like it is, and the county would make the commitment that we're going to explore and purchase two appropriate vehicles, whether it's a hybrid or not, that's a suggestion.
Yeah.
Right? We need to get the vehicle that we need to get.
All right, I'm good. I'm on board with that.
So then my other question, Lisa, as you write that down is, can we find the dollars to get it done yet in this fiscal year instead of plugging it into next year's budget?
From my initial thoughts, yes.
June is a good time, the 2018 is on there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, good. Okay.
Conservation for the county. Education. Yeah, what's that with here? No. I asked that the other day. Is there anything else that anybody has a question on? We got the job description then.
Okay.
For the proposed position. So we're going to explain that, and I know Laura's got some questions. I address you as well.
So what our request here is to add a full-time housing service coordinator position. That's the title we come up with. The position we worked with Steph and Alyssa on developing that. The history here is that there's been a handful of agencies that we've probably been meeting for over a year at least, talking about the concept of a centralized intake process. We have a number of agencies that do homelessness prevention for rent and utility assistance. And a lot of what we're seeing for individuals applying for that assistance. I'll explain the process. Generally, our office is a starting point for folks. They need to apply for general assistance to determine if we're able to help. If we're not, we give them a notice of decision, and then they also need a notice of decision generally from NICA. So they've got two stops they need to hit before they can even go on to say emergency residence project, so they learn in that. So they come into us if we're unable to help. Or even if we can help, but a lot of times we see where people need maybe more than what we can do. They've got past due that they've got to get caught up, or they're just current rent is higher than what we assist with. So then they take that information from our office, and then they start making their appointments. So there's certain days when they can go to the emergency residence project we've seen, so it's Mondays and Thursdays when they take applications. Good Neighbor has certain times of the week that they see people as well. You have to call to schedule to get an appointment. St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church, you've got to call. They take calls on Thursday morning at 8 a.m. to get an appointment for the following week. That's still practice. And so there's a variety of steps that people have to go through to try and get this assistance. So the conversation that we've been having with Good Neighbor, City of Ames, I've been at the with the Planning and Housing Office, the Emergency Residence Project, Salvation Army, St. Thomas has joined us at the table, and our office has been, can we work to streamline this process for people and potentially reduce duplication of assistance if possible, and start to really try to dive in more on what are the barriers for people, what's going on in their lives that is creating kind of this constant housing instability for them. So we've talked about having one point of entry, basically, where an application would be received. And then that entry point would work with the other agencies to try to coordinate the assistance. What can those other agencies do? So then that individual is not needing to go from here to here to here to here. We can also then, as I said, dive further into what's going on with them and hopefully try and get them connected to appropriate resources and services. Child care needs, mental health needs, substance use treatment, whatever that needs that may arise to the top after we've been able to spend more time with them. So the group is really wanting to have it be just one entry point. I had expressed interest in that, especially within our office. As we work county-wide, we work with all of these agencies already. And nobody else has spoken on the team to say that they want to do this. Some have said, you know, we would rather not have to do this and have somebody else manage this. But we're not to the point of pooling funds or anything like that. It's just going to be a coordination team. So what we've also done is we're trying to look at database systems, something that potentially everyone would be able to have access to so that they could pull person's information up and identify if they, yes, this looks like somebody that we can assist. So we've met with Iowa Community Alliance. They have a statewide database that's utilized homeless management information system. We've met with them in emergency residents currently use that database, and I believe the Salvation Army does. The program, my understanding, is free for them to use because they also get other dollars that makes that database basically free for their access. However, if we were to use it in this manner, our understanding is that there would likely be a cost for access to it, a cost to develop what we would want it to potentially be. But we don't know what that cost is. So then the next thing we did was we met with Iowa State Association of County staff that work with the Community Services Network, CSN, which is database that we use in our office for mental health services. And they're also the general assistance component to it. We're not currently using the general assistance component, but we're looking at moving towards that no matter what direction this goes. But so we met with them, and they have a lot of interest in this. They did a demo of CSN for us. At the table was Good Neighbors, City, Emergency Residence Project, and Salvation Army, and St. Thomas weren't able to be there. But we need to do further exploration, and I reached out to the group to see if what are they interested in CSN, do we want to explore that further. The feedback I've gotten from a couple of folks is, we're interested, we want to look at that further. ISAC is very interested in it. They took it to the Iowa Community Services Affiliate, maybe just last week, and there was interest from board members, is my understanding, in this concept. ISAC is wondering if it would be something that other counties in the state of Iowa would be interested in. So we don't know, until we flush it out to really know what would be needed in addition to what's available right now in CSN, we don't know what ISAC's time would be for any additional development and that kind of thing. So we don't know if there could be potential costs. So the ISAC piece. So there's some unknown.
Okay. I talked to Vanessa Baker Latifer this morning, and I put a call in to Brenda Dreyer, who's the vice chair of Story County Health and Drive.
Okay.
So, and obviously, I've been at some meetings where over the past year there's been a discussion about centralized intake, right? So, I guess my first question is, Vanessa, when I said it's on our workshop agenda to go ahead and discuss about the hiring of somebody, and Vanessa was a little surprised because I don't know that she was aware that the county was thinking about stepping up to fill the role.
She called me this morning also, and her and I talked about it, and she's very much aware of it, that we were looking to submit this within our budget. The entire team has been aware of it. So, and I explained to Vanessa what maybe threw her maybe was the title of the job.
Because she came back and said, isn't it more homeless prevention? I said, yeah, the job description itself is homeless prevention, but it doesn't say homeless prevention yet. So, but the reason I wanted to try and talk to, somebody from some of the trust fund, too, is I know at one point related to the Two Rivers concept, was that there was the discussion of having one intake
point, even to obtain those funding dollars for like grant assistance from Story County. So that was kind of that background here, is that looking at, you talked to a handful of agencies, and it sounds like some people move in and out of the conversation depending on your conversations occurring and that they can get there or not. So is it your concept here that it actually one person that would be employed by Story County would be the centralized intake for everybody, whether it be Two Rivers for people in Story County, or will Two Rivers be left out of it because it's a multi-county agency? That's okay. And also then, what happens if somebody goes to YSS first and then finds out they need that assistance? Are they going to still intake, or do they come back over to you? Are you only doing people that would qualify for general assistance? I'll stop this.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's actually what Two Rivers is doing. It's coordinated entry for shelter care.
Okay.
So it's for those individuals who are literally homeless. They don't have anywhere to go, and it's to help them get into shelter care and then back out of shelter care. What we're looking at is preventing that where people are literally homeless. So it's for homelessness prevention for rent and utility assistance. So they are two totally separate intake processes. So Two Rivers would still exist. They would
okay.
do their part,
mm-hmm.
and then this would be the other piece of it for those folks who are trying to prevent that.
So my next question being focused on the homeless prevention, all right, is that obviously all of these agencies you've mentioned could use dollars to help people get in. I mean, right? Rent assistance, to help keep them from becoming homeless. I mean, and then the Story County Housing Trust Fund has their first program was for necessary repairs to keep their home livable, right? And now they're, I guess, bringing up the rent assistance program. That's what I was calling Brenda about to verify that. But, from this standpoint, and asking you kind of just, put your best hat on here. Is it better for the county to look at giving the money directly to agencies who are already dispersing to help people stay in their homes, whether it be owned or rented, or are we going to be most effectively using these dollars that we would spend on the employee by having the coordination?
My given the entities that have been at the table here, I think they are invested in getting this up and going with the thought that it can help prevent that duplication. Right now we've got no coordination with any of the programs. I mean, they call and say, hey, are you able to do this? Yeah, we are. And that's pretty much it. So what this position can do is dive deeper into what's going on with an individual, what are their circumstances, what are those barriers, so that we can hopefully prevent them from every year or every couple of months going through this cycle of needing to access the dollars through the agency. But then the dollars are getting stretched further.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
the thing I can say about this is there's two things. One is that somebody's not going to like kind of six or seven agencies and redoing it and going like over the course maybe of even 2 weeks, and you're going to have drop-offs at these folks, If they, I really like the idea of the central intake. The other thing you said that I really liked was the case management approach. What's causing the housing instability? Let's dig a little deeper under the surface and not just say, this person needs a place to stay. Okay, here's some money. Go find yourself a place to stay.
We're putting a band-aid on it. We're getting them through that month, and then now we're faced with the next month trying to figure out.
But the question I maybe had, one question that I had, and it looks to me like, the question is, are any of these other agencies in a position to help fund this position? And I would say the answer is probably no, looking at them with the possible exception of the city. And I don't know if the city's already working with the Housing Trust Fund. I don't know if there's anything else there, other governmental entities, that could help fund the position.
without, I mean, I think that would be something we would need to directly ask them, but at my first glance, I would probably say no.
I wouldn't ask residents' projects with neighbors for St. Thomas or Micro Salvation Army. I think those are...
Well, we want them using their dollars directly as
citizens. Exactly.
We don't want them using their dollars here. So if I may, so the first thing I would point out is this: it's not like this is a recent idea. I think you've been talking about this for well over a year. I think the first time you and I talked about this was about a year ago, roughly. And you've been working on laying it out and working with as many partners as possible. But let's just talk through where we are right now. Linda, I think you hit the nail on the head, but I'm going to try to even be more specific. Right now, we've got individuals or families that are in as tough a time in their life as they've ever been in. They're on the verge of homelessness. And so they reach out for help. And with everything else they're dealing with, right now, getting to the help is as complex as it can possibly be. Well, you can go here, but you can only go there on a Monday. And you got to call here to make an appointment for the next week. And these people are struggling to just figure out what the next hour and day looks like. And it's a really complex system that we're asking them to go through. Secondly, we have this informal tie among all these different groups that could assist these people, but we don't have any real formal tie. And so even the individual that's able to navigate their way through the process, we don't know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. And so I believe that there is some duplication of services where we wouldn't need duplication services. Finally, if you accept that individuals and families that are on the verge of going through homelessness need assistance, and it's good for our community that we assist them, then what's the other entity other than Story County that makes sense to provide that spot?
Right. This is my comment. Obviously, you talked to Rick a year ago. I've been going to these meetings for some of them for over 2 years, and this is the first time I've heard that you're considering this. You've known about it for, a year, Rick, or about the...
I've known that there was a concern and that there was work going on to build a proposal that might or might not come to the board supervisors.
I would like in the future that all three supervisors know at the same time, especially I'm a little embarrassed to have attended all those meetings over the years and never have known that community services was doing something. So the feedback as a supervisor who is out there and hearing something, needing something, I've asked multiple times at Two Rivers, especially, what can the county do to be more helpful? What do you need? And I understand Two Rivers won't be part of that, but I'm very concerned about the lack of flow of communication. So if we could work on that in the future, that would be very helpful. So let's go ahead. I'm in support of this, and I'm glad to see there is a way we can help and a way that we could impact for further, you know, to solve some problems. My next question is at what point do we let go of them? Do these clients become now long-term clients of a caseworker, our story, or after how long do we say we're done?
We haven't identified a set time frame by any means, and I think it really kind of depends on the individual circumstances. If we're ensuring that they've gotten connected where they need to be, they're following through on things, I think we back away, and then we're there as a resource for them down the road if they need assistance. For somebody who knows their circumstances, they're not going to have to tell their story over and over again, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it's not meant to be... Now you're connected with us, and we stay connected for the next 2 or 3 years. If there continues to be that instability, sure, we're happy to continue to work with them and try and problem solve what's going on. But I don't think you can say it's a 90-day program, it's a 120-day program, because everybody's circumstances can change.
Okay. So you'd be setting it on an individual basis, with kind of the overall being once they are in house, once their crisis has ended and they are no longer facing homelessness.
Right.
Okay.
And it's certainly voluntary on their part. I mean,
right.
They're not required to work ongoing with us, but we want to be there for that, to be a resource for them, certainly.
I envision it almost being a handoff to another agency with maybe some follow-up, you know, on down the road, just to see how it's going, rather than you continuing to case manage them, or, you know, whatever. Well, I did have one other question, though.
I just wanted to comment, isn't that the part of the problem right now is nobody is a caseworker? I mean, there's nobody available in these other agencies.
Yeah, okay. Nobody
is. Okay, sure.
And I wouldn't want to underfund an effort like this, but it did, I do want to ask, would a 3-4-time position be worth looking at, or do you think a full-time position is needed given all the coordination?
I think it's challenging for us to know for certain until we get into it. We've had conversations on, is one position going to be enough down the road as this bill? Is that enough? So
that's my question.
Okay. Yeah, so I've got two quick things. First one, just in response to Linda. First of all, I think this is a full-time position. But secondly, even if it's not, the reality is in today's job market, we're not going to find anybody willing to work 3-4-time. So if we're going to create the position, let's create the position, try to get it filled with somebody credible. Second point, I got to go back to Supervisor Olson's, can I use the word chagrin? Chagrin at not feeling like you were not part of this process, and somehow I took it, and maybe I took it wrong, but somehow holding Carla accountable for information you didn't have.
Well,
and if I could finish,
sure.
So our responsibility as a board of supervisors, collectively, is to make decisions. Our staff's responsibility is to try to develop proposals to bring to the board that take into account what our issues are and what a possibility is to solve the issue. And so if there is some misunderstanding, when Carla and I talked, it was not Carla looking for permission or even looking for what to build. It was, Rick, can you give me some insight on the kind of questions that you might ask? And I think I was viewed not as a supervisor or decision maker, but as a resource to help build a proposal. And so whenever and I talked about it, again, I don't buy for a second that it was one supervisor, because they were a supervisor, getting information that the others didn't. I think I was viewed as a potential resource to help Carla do what her job was, and nothing more than that. You can correct me if it was something different than that, but I don't like for one second that I feel like Carla took some grief that I don't think she deserved at all.
Okay, well, I approached looking at this and conveying this. Let's go back here a little bit, because I pointed out I was out there, you know, and one of the things that I am concerned about for all three of us, and I've noticed over the last 2 years, and Carla, it's not for you. I think really this is a discussion that we had with kind of the internal and external.
Director. I agree with that.
Okay.
I don't think
so. Please understand this is not a criticism. My comment, though, it has to do with I've been out there a couple of times and I've had the public tell me what's going on in the county. And I think that doesn't present all of us well. And I'll leave it at that, because it wasn't a criticism that you using him as a resource. Per se, he's a good resource to use, and he asks good questions. So, but that is the backward, I think. Yeah, that's where I believe it is when we're out there, we don't even know.
And I'm also trying to kind of move it along, because we have a 1 o'clock meeting with some
details. Sure, okay.
So, put together. So,
yeah. I apologize if you took it personally.
Okay, thank you.
All right, moving forward.
All right. So
we'll have to bring this back.
And then
Prior to July 1st, that's the effective date.
And I've done some good work with the other agencies on this, and I want to thank you for
it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I'll work with Alyssa to figure out the time.